From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hope everyone out there had a good and safe 4th of July, enjoying the fireworks and the brats and burgers and everything else, and time with family and friends. But we've got a great show ahead for you today. Speaking of the celebration of America, there's a new book that's out that I think is a lot of fun for American Catholics, and that is Incredible Catholic America, written by Marian Amberg. She's the true shrine expert of the United States, in my opinion, and she's actually the script writer for my new series with EWTN called Hidden Gems. But this new book, Incredible Catholic America, looks at some facts and factoids and trivia and some great stories that you've never, ever heard of about Catholicism in the United States. So we'll be excited to chat with Marian later in the show. Also joining us today will be Michael Litchens from Sophia Institute Press, talking to us about a brand new book called I Killed Maria Goretti, that's written based on interviews with Alessandro, the person who murdered Maria Goretti in that infamous story. And we'll be talking with Michael Litchens about some of the beautiful things that we can learn from that terrible tragedy. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, every Saturday, but on Saturday, July 12th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, my episode in Lanciano in Italy. I'll be traveling there, where a Basilian monk in the mid-8th century is said to have experienced the transformation of the host into wine, or bread and wine, into the real presence of Jesus' body and blood. So check that one out, July 12th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And They Might Be Saints is my show about people on the path to sainthood on Sunday, July 20th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The episode on Venerable Mother Maria Kalpis airs, and that's the case for sainthood of Venerable Maria Kalpis, the founder of the Sisters of St. Casimir in Chicago. And her inspirational work in education and healthcare led many to seek her intercession before God on their behalf. Check that one out. They Might Be Saints. Mother Maria Kalpis. She's a Chicago saint, so one of my favorites. And later in the show, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today's date, we've got Blessed Joseph Bossuet, who lived from 1909 to 1969 in France. And the 365 Days with Mary Project is the Economissa icon of the Most Holy Theotokos from Great Lavra in Greece in the 8th century. And the question of the week is a good one. Are there any living stigmatics? I'll do my best to try to answer that one. And we'll be taking a look at all those items later in the program. But for now, let's look at miracle news. We have an interesting item this week. I hardly know what to make of it, but I'll report it anyway. This was reported by CatholicVote.org. And it's the story of a Catholic mother finds her infant son in extraordinary state 37 years after his death. So we're talking about an incorruptible infant. And so the story is reported that when Mary Pat and Sean Gallagher were arranging to move their infant son's remains nearly 40 years after his death, they received a phone call from the funeral director, who said, I've never seen anything like this. Your child looks like he's sleeping. And of course, they gave in 1982, they gave birth to the son, Brian, in Fort Knox Army Base in Kentucky. And complications during labor led to his immediate transfer to neonatal intensive care. But despite attempts to resuscitate him, Brian passed away shortly after birth. And 37 years later, the Gallaghers arranged to relocate his remains so that he could one day be buried near them at a veterans cemetery in South Dakota. And during the reinterment process, the original gasket was accidentally damaged, requiring it to be opened so Brian's body could be transferred to a new one. And Brian had been embalmed and buried in the standard casket. He was autopsied after death, and procedures like that typically hasten decay. But when the casket was opened during the 2019 reinterment process, the funeral director was able to gently remove and redress his body without disturbing it. And, of course, that was a stunning call that the Gallaghers received. But this was a new story that was reported, like I said, on CatholicVote.org.
And of course, it's complicated. When we think of incorruptibility, we always think of sainthood, incorruptible saints, and we don't have any cases of incorrupt infants. So this is pretty remarkable. What to make of it, I'm not quite sure, but that's the miracle news for today. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in the fastest with the correct answer. People who know me, my friends, know that I love trivia and pub trivia at that. You might find me at a bar on some random night playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. And the question from last week related, who is the youngest male saint canonized by the Catholic Church other than Fatima visionary Francisco Marto, who died at age 10? And the answer to that question is the youngest male saint canonized by the Catholic Church is generally considered to be Saint Dominic Savio. And he was born in 1842 in Riva in Italy and died in 1857. He was canonized in 1954, and his feast day is May 6th. And he was a student of Saint John Bosco and a member of the Salesian community. And so he is the patron saint of choir boys, falsely accused, and juvenile delinquents. And so that is the youngest saint who's not Francisco Marto. So that is the answer to this week's trivia question. And the question for this week is the companion question. Who is the youngest non-martyr saint who's not a Fatima visionary in our Catholic Church? Question, who is the youngest non-martyr female saint in our Catholic Church who is not one of the Fatima children? If you think you know that answer, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or questions@miraclehunter.com, and the answers, the person with the fastest answer is going to win that prize, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Marian Amberg, author of the brand new book, Incredible Catholic America. Stay with us for that.
Back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People know from my Explorer series and this radio show that I travel all around the world. I look at the shrines all around the world, and it's been a great blessing to work for EWTN and to bring those shrines to life, or their stories to life, I should say. And the new series that is featured on EWTN is called Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines Across America. I tend to go to the shrines across the world, but believe it or not, there's beautiful places of pilgrimage and miracles even here in the United States. And I'm so excited today because we have the script writer from the Hidden Gems television series, and you can check out that series if you can go to ondemand.ewtn.com and look for Hidden Gems. You can watch some of the episodes. 10 more episodes are on the way. But she's the author of a brand new book called Incredible Catholic America. It's out from our Sunday Visitor. And in my opinion, she is the true shrine expert of the United States. And so I'm so excited to welcome back to the show, Marian Amberg. Welcome back, Marian.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be back.
Yeah, what a fun book. I think that, as I've talked to you about before, I do myself and my family, we all love trivia. And so I think that, and we do Catholic pub trivia on this show, so this book was right down my alley in discussing some of the incredible things that are found right here in the United States that relate to Catholicism in our Catholic Church here. So I think that it was such a fun way to present all this information, and the book is chock full of little tidbits and facts and trivia, interesting stories, and things that people will find inspirational that they haven't even heard of before. So I should ask you, I know you've written a number of other books about shrines and miracles in the United States and Marian, places of Mary throughout the United States. What was it that inspired you to focus your attention on Incredible Catholic America?
Well, I had been freelancing for Catholic magazines for about 30 years. And one of the things that I always tried to do in my articles is to find something about the shrine, the cathedral, the church, the chapel, whatever I was writing about, that was kind of hidden, like most people didn't know. Well, over the years, I accumulated all of these little tidbits, and I thought, okay, it's time to put it into a book. And it was really, really a lot of fun, because some of this stuff is just off the wall. It's things that we don't even think about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that some of these things, they're so fun to read about, but we never would have thought about them unless we're presented in a certain way. And I think that one of the fun things of the book is you present incredible facts in this book. And we don't necessarily think of, you know, incredible facts of Catholicism, but here they are in the book. So in your book, give us a few of the incredible facts, whether the tallest or the largest or the whatever it might be. What are some of the things that caught your eye when you wrote this book?
Well, one of the things that caught my eye is the world's largest rosary collection. Now, you would think that would be in Rome, but it's not. And it's in a very small town called Stevenson, Washington. And it's the collection of a Catholic convert, Donald A. Brown. He was in a hospital in Oregon, and the nurses, it was a Catholic hospital, and the nurses were nuns, and they were wearing long habits at the time, and they had a rosary attached to their habit. He became fascinated by the rosaries, converted to Catholicism, and then began assembling this collection of over 4,000 rosaries. And one of the most prized rosaries is a small wooden bead rosary used by John F. Kennedy during World War II when he served in the Navy.
Amazing. And you also have some things like the tallest baptismal font or that Mega Mary in Montana. Tell us a little bit about some of the other kinds of incredible facts that you have.
Well, if you get baptized at the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Portland, Maine, you're already going to have 1 foot in heaven, because the baptismal font is over 13 feet tall.
Wow.
I mean, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's patterned after a baptismal font in Italy. But if you're ever cruising along I-94 in Montana, you will never, ever forget this beautiful woman standing on a hill outside Butte. And that is the statue of Our Lady of the Rockies. She's 90 feet tall, and she is the largest Christian statue in the country. She's so large that you can walk inside the base of the statue, leave a memento of a loved one, say a prayer, or, you know, just gawk at everything that's inside of that statue. And that's the only statue I know of that where you can really, a religious statue where you can walk inside.
Amazing. And one of the fun parts of the book is that you go through all this trivia through the United States. You have all the fun facts, but you also present a trivia in a way that I think kids and families would really enjoy. One of the questions that is kind of interesting, why don't devils like round churches?
That is one of my favorites. Why don't devils like round churches? Well, that's because there's no place to hide. And we have a number of round churches in the country, and I think the Coliseum Church at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Martyrs in New York, I think that might be the largest Catholic round church. And what's interesting about the Coliseum Church in New York, it has 70 doors. And there certainly is the most number of doors in any church in the country.
Amazing. And I think that you go even beyond architecture to things that you wouldn't expect, like corn. There's a missionary with a portrait done in corn.
Yes. So you find all kinds of things that are related to Catholicism that are not necessarily in churches. So in South Dakota, there is a place called the Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota. And inside, you'll find a portrait, the only priest that I know of who had his portrait done in corn, and that is Father DeSmet. And he is highly revered in South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, because he did a lot of work with the Indians evangelizing on the frontier. And what's interesting about this portrait, it's not done in corn kernels, but it's done in ears of corn, so like black corn, yellow corn. And the funny story that goes with it is, it's a good thing that his portrait is inside the Corn Palace. If it had been outside on the walls, he would have been pecked to death, martyred for the faith.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking today with Marian Amberg about her brand new book, Incredible Catholic America. And as I mentioned before, she's a scriptwriter for Hidden Gems, my new series on EWTN, and in my opinion, the true shrine expert of the United States. And when I talk about saints a lot on this show, of course. They Might Be Saints is one of my programs, and I always talk about American saints and those on the path to sainthood. But you also have some fun trivia questions and factoids about American saints. I think there's a ballroom church for Elizabeth Ann Seton. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, that's in New York, and it's called the Seton Shrine and also Our Lady of the Rosary Shrine. So when they were designing, the architects were designing the shrine for St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, one of the architects was a relative of Elizabeth Ann Seton, and so he decided that they needed to design the church like a ballroom because she loved to dance. And so it does resemble a ballroom, but of course, you know, it's also a church.
Yeah, amazing. And then also we... Venerable Fulton Sheen, that's someone on the path to sainthood as well. I think he'll be a blessed at some time very soon. We learned some interesting facts about him as well.
Yes, he could offer Mass in both the Roman Catholic and the Byzantine Church rites. And as far as I know, that is the only person on the way to sainthood in the U.S. that offered Mass in both rites.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I can't think of another example. But we're talking today with Marian Amberg, the author of Incredible Catholic America. It's a brand new book that's out from our Sunday Visitor. And of course, I love your descriptions of the churches and the art that you see in these churches. And I think that some of them are quirky and kitschy, you might say. A Last Supper painting in Louisiana. Tell us a little bit about the strange composition of that one.
This is a great story, and it's really it's a great place to take visitors or go visit yourself if you're ever in Parks, Louisiana. So about a decade, maybe longer than that, maybe the early 2000s, the pastor at the church decided that he wanted to add some new paintings, kind of liven up the church a little bit. So he commissioned an artist to do a painting of Jesus and four of the disciples at the Last Supper. So you have your traditional, you know, goblets, you have platters of, you know, bread on the table, but there's one thing there that no other painting in the U.S. has of the Last Supper, and that is a bottle of Tabasco sauce. And so we call it the hottest Last Supper in the United States.
Very funny. And I couldn't let you go without you talking a little bit about miracles. I always make all my guests do. And I think that some of your other books, and this one as well, are sprinkled with little miracle stories that we have here in the United States. And there is a Guadalupe church in Colorado that has a little bit of a miracle connection.
Oh, I love this story because it, you know, you just can't make up stuff like this. So about 10 years ago, a fire broke out in Our Lady of Guadalupe Church in Conejos, Colorado, and that's located right on the Colorado-New Mexico border. Tiny little town. And it just so happened that the firefighters for the area were meeting in a town 3 miles down the road when the 911 call came in. So they were on the scene within 10 minutes and the church was saved. And it's a very historic church. Well, before the fire, there is a painting of Our Lady of Guadalupe in the sanctuary. Before the fire, Our Lady was not wearing a crown. After the fire, she was wearing a crown of soot. Huh. And this crown has like the little points that you would see on like a crown, like Queen Elizabeth would wear, like the little points that go up. So she was wearing this crown of soot, and she still has it on today. It's still there today. So if you're ever in that area of the country, it's a wonderful church to visit. It's a marvel. Nobody could have, made the soot from the fire form a crown unless it came from heaven.
Sounds like a miracle to me. We've been talking today with Marian Amberg, author of the brand new book, Incredible Catholic America, from our Sunday visitor. Tell us, Marian, as we wrap up the interview today, what is your great hope for people who pick up this fun book for their families or friends or otherwise, or their growth in their Catholic faith? What do you hope for when people get this book?
I just want people to look at the Catholic faith and not say, we just have to go to church on Sunday. No, it encompasses our whole life. And there's so many wonderful gems out there. I think everybody has a story they could tell about their Catholic faith. And maybe this book will inspire them to think about the wonderful things that they have seen and that they have experienced. And it's I think it's also a conversation starter with perhaps even non-Catholic people. You know, these are the things that have happened, and just to rejoice and be glad in Catholic America.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Marian Amberg, for joining us on today's program. And for people who want to pick up this book for their families or for their friends or just for their own perusal of Catholic trivia, what is the best place where people can go to pick up this book?
You can get this book at osbcatholicbookstore.com. It's on all the major bookstore websites. Catholic bookstores also have it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Marian Amberg, for writing this book and for your great work script writing for Hidden Gems. We're excited for the next episodes to come out. Thank you so much, Marian, for joining us on today's program.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you.
God bless you. That was Marian Amberg with her new book, Incredible Catholic America, True Shrine Expert. And I think you're going to love this book. It's a lot of fun. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Are there any people who are still alive today who are known to have the stigmata? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting your emails sent to my email inbox. I love trying to answer them when I can. But I also like getting questions in person when I give a talk. I travel around the country, maybe give 20 talks a year at different Catholic churches, shrines, or conferences, always talking about miracles, how the church investigates miracles, Eucharistic miracles, Marian apparitions, always something along those lines. But at the end of the talk, I usually speak for 45 minutes or an hour, and then I answer questions at the end, and I love to hear what people are thinking about. So anybody who would like to have me speak at their parish, you can send me an email. Just go to my website and click on the contact tab, and you can send me a message that way. So for this week's question, it's a good one. It's from Krista. She says, Dear Miracle Hunter, I have a question that I'm curious if you know the answer to. Are there any living men or women that are known to have stigmata? I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks, Krista. Well, great question, Krista. And of course, when we're talking about the stigmata, we're talking about those people, saints and mystics and otherwise, who bear the wounds of Christ. And for some people, that involves the five traditional wounds. That might be somebody who has the wounds in their hands or their wrists or otherwise. We see a variety in the types of wounds that have been exhibited by saints over the years. But the question is, are there any current cases? We've heard of many of these cases throughout history, but what about now? And so there are two that I can think of off the top of my head. One is Father Zlatko Sudac, who was born in Croatia in 1971. He's a diocesan priest who claims to have a cross-shaped wound on his forehead starting in 1999, and additional wounds on his wrists and feet and side since 2000. So his wounds were examined at Rome's Gemelli Clinic, and no explanation was found, although nothing was deemed miraculous. And so, of course, without the explanation, it's maybe de facto miraculous. But he's currently a priest in the Kirk Diocese. And it's an interesting case where he is known by the church to have this claim of this phenomena. And when we see a very public stigmatic and the church doesn't condemn it, that isn't quite a sign of approval, but it's the next closest thing. So no approvals are ever given to stigmatics until after their death. So we'll have to see at some point in the future about Father Zlatko Sudac. But he is one of the very rare examples. And the other one that I can think of, and I've actually I've interviewed her. She traveled to Chicago once, and her people called me up, and so we did an interview. That's Mirna Nazur. She's the living stigmatic of Sophaniers. And these events in 1982 and 1983, right after her marriage in 1982, oil began dripping from this small icon known as Our Lady of Sophaniers, and from her hands came this oil. And eventually, she developed stigmata in her forehead, hands, and side. And she's also claimed to have visions of the Virgin Mary. Now, this is another phenomenon that is very known to the Catholic Church. I think even Pope Francis met with Mirna at some point. And so one of the very interesting things is that her stigmata wounds seem to reappear in alignment with calendar coincidences of the Eastern and Western Easter. So 1984, 87, 1990. And because this happens with predicted regularity, you can actually go on YouTube and you can see these wounds forming within when there are no wounds to be seen and closing. The footage is absolutely amazing. Is she authentic? We can't really say. Of course, the church hasn't really rendered a judgment on her case, but in my opinion, perhaps she is the most authentic stigmatic that we have in the world today. There may be others, but these are two of the very famous ones that I'm aware of. So thanks, Krista, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima May 13th, or Lourdes February 11th, or Guadalupe December 12th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to each date of the calendar year. It might be the occurrence of a miracle, or a feast day, or the building of a basilica, or another way that Mary is honored on each and every day of the calendar year from somewhere around the world. So for today's day, we've got the Economisa icon of the Most Holy Theotokos in Great Lavra in Greece in the 8th century. Now, the story goes that in the 900s, the unfinished great monastery on Mount Athos ran out of funds, and the starving monks had to leave. And finally, the monastery's founder, St. Athanasius, left too in search of help. And on the road, he met a woman in a long blue veil. And when Athanasius asked the lady's name, she answered, "I am the Mother of the Lord." The abbot asked for a sign, "Strike the rock with your staff," and as water flowed from the rock, she vanished. Athanasius returned to find the building completed and stocked with supplies, and soon it was full of monks as well. In the monastery church, the Economisa icon depicts many saints connected with the monastery. Our Lady the Steward is honored, along with Saint Athanasius on his feast day on July 5th. And that is the story associated with the Economisa icon of the Most Holy Theotokos from Great Lavra in Greece in the 8th century. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of Marian titles from around the world, you can connect to the project at 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book. You can download the app, 365 Days with Mary, available for free on the Apple App Store. Or you can connect to the Facebook page and join any of the 10,000 other followers who get a Marian devotion each and every day posted to their Facebook feed. Let's take a look at Sainthood News. We do this every week where we talk about the sainthood news coming down the pipeline. We're talking about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. But in the recent judgment of Pope Leo, they came out of the first dicastery, you might say, with some new statements, new promulgations of decrees, I should say, regarding future saints. And so Pope Leo has recognized the heroic virtue of a woman with dwarfism. Anna Fulghida Borfacelli, known as Venerable now, she was an apostle the Gospel of Suffering, as she was known, with a great love of Our Lady and the poor, and a number of canonization causes were recently advanced, including the cause of a woman who was born with dwarfism caused by osteoporosis, and she became an apostle of the Gospel of Suffering. And she was previously recognized as the servant of God, but Pope Leo's promulgation recognized her heroic virtues, moving her status to venerable, which is the next stage in the canonization process. Her cause is now in need of a miracle through the intercession in order for her to be declared a blessed and finally a saint. But she was born in 1928 in a village in Italy and used a wheelchair for most of her life. And this was all due to bone fragility that caused her dwarfism at birth. And her older sister had the same exact condition. And she was not able to attend school, but she learned to read and write from her parents, and she attended Mass in her local parish and very active in Catholic Action. And you can read her Vatican biography if you go to the page for the causes for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints website. They have a whole biography of this new venerable, Anna Fulghida Bartolacelli. And with one miracle, she'll be a blessed. A second miracle, she will be known as a saint. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week. We talk about people on the path to the sainthood, and we look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. So for today's date, we've got Blessed Joseph Boisil, who was born on July 5th and died, or his feast day is July 5th, today's date, and he was born on December 20th, 1903, in Les Lauraux in France. And he was born to a poor peasant family. Joseph was baptized on the day of his birth. His father died when the boy was 14. And Joseph studied at the junior seminary at the missionary oblates of Mary Immaculate on the Isle of Jersey and then on the island of Verdier in France. He was considered a very ordinary student, and he was not very intelligent. However, he was pious, hardworking, and had other qualities of spiritual leadership. And he was sent to study in Liège in Belgium and La Brosse in France, and he made his solemn oblation in September of 1935 and ordained a priest in 1937. He was some of the first missionaries to Laos. He arrived in 1938, and he worked with the Hmong communities in the mountain provinces there on the border of Vietnam, and he won the admiration of the local people by hard work and care for the sick. He was captured in 1945 by the World War II Japanese troops and imprisoned in Vien in Vietnam in conditions that nearly ruined his health. He was freed after the war. He returned to Laos in 1946, and his mission had been destroyed when he got there. And immediately he set work to reestablish the mission and rebuild it. In 1949, he founded a minor seminary there. In 1952, Father Joseph returned to the mountains to work amongst the Hmong people, but the warfare between the French forces and the communist guerrillas in the region caused him to return in 1957 to help the refugees who were fleeing the mountains. With assorted breaks due to health problems, he continued to work in the area for another dozen years. And finally, on July 5th in 1969, he and two lay oblate missionaries were traveling to prepare for Sunday Mass. The little group was attacked and killed by communist guerrillas on the road, so he is considered a martyr. He was shot in the head while driving on Saturday, July 5th, 1969, on the road in Laos. The killers had wrecked his car, set it on fire, and his body was burned so badly he was almost unrecognizable. Declared venerable by Pope Francis in 2015, and also declared a martyr, a blessed, on December 11th, 2016. With one miracle, he will go on to be declared a saint. But for now, he's Blessed Joseph Bosail, and he is the Might Be Saint of the Day. And for people interested in They Might Be Saints, you can check out my book available at EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com, where I tell the stories of 22 Americans, Venerables, and Blesseds. Or you can check out my series They Might Be Saints on EWTN Television. This Sunday, or Sunday, July 20th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the story is of Mother Maria Kalpis, a Venerable. The cause for sainthood of Venerable Mother Maria Kalpis, founder of the Sisters of St. Casimir in Chicago, in her inspirational work in education and healthcare, led many to seek her intercession before God on their behalf. Check that one out. They Might Be Saints, July 20th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when I come back, we'll be talking with Michael Litchens from Sophia Institute Press about the brand new book, I Killed Maria Goretti. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. You've probably heard the name of this saint, Maria Goretti. She's an Italian girl, a virgin martyr, and she died in the year 1902. And she's one of the very youngest saints to be canonized. And she was born to a farming family, and her father died when she was nine, and she had to share a house with another family, the Serenellis. She took over the household duties while her mother and children, the other children, worked in the fields. And unfortunately, one afternoon, Alessandro, the Serenelli's 20-year-old son, made advances on her, and it ended up with the murder of Maria Goretti. And this Alessandro was arrested and convicted and jailed. And during imprisonment, he repented, and he was released from prison later. Forgiveness was given to him, I suppose. And he became a lay brother in a Capuchin monastery and died in 1970. And, of course, Maria went on to be beatified and canonized at some point along the way. And so this is one of the incredible stories of our Catholic faith, this story of forgiveness. And there's a brand new book that's out that is written by Pietro de Donato, who interviewed Alessandro, the murderer of Maria Goretti. And he interviewed him and the Goretti family in order to create this book. And the title we have coming from Sophia Institute Press is I Killed Maria Goretti. What a gripping title. We're so excited today to be joined by Michael Litchens from Sophia Institute Press to talk to us about this great new book. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a joy to always join you.
Thank you. I gave a little bit of a background on this book because the title is quite stunning. I Killed Maria Goretti. I think that people might want to pick up the book just because of the shock factor. We don't have many stories like this one. Tell a little bit about why this story has gripped Catholic audiences for so long.
I think because, for one, it's recent, so we have a surprising amount of records and details. Like you noted, Pietro di Donato got to interview Alessandro Serenelli before writing this. And so we're blessed to be able to have this so recent to us. But it's also such a almost unbelievable story. If we didn't have the documentation, it would be hard to believe for a lot of people. It's a story of grace and forgiveness for what many of us would consider just an unforgivable thing, the murder of a child. But it's forgiveness in both a supernatural way and in a way that we can understand.
Yeah, and I think that Maria Goretti has attracted the attention or the admiration of the faithful over the decades. She died in 1902. Of course, she's considered a martyr for purity, but her forgiveness is the thing that I think is even more pointed at these days anyway. Talk a little bit about the person Maria Goretti, who she was aside from this incident. Tell us a little bit of what we do know about her life as interviewed by the author Pietro De Donato when he interviewed the Goretti family. What do we know about who the person was, Maria Goretti?
Well, Maria was born into a really rough life. She was the daughter of peasant farmers, just like the Serinellis. It was not an easy life by any means. And such, when Maria's father died when she was about 6 years old, he died of malaria. Mom had to go work in the fields because they still had to work. And so Maria took over the household duties at a very young age, taking care of the house, preparing meals. For her younger siblings, she also helped raise them. And she showed a lot of strength and determination, which you also see in her mom in this book. And that was even so true with the faith. They were very devout Catholics. They went to Mass often. They were devoted to the Eucharist and to the saints. And this was shown throughout Maria's life up to and especially after she was stabbed to death.
And when we look at the murderer, Alessandro, who gave this interview, who had such a, I mean, it's such a tragic moment, such a tragic choice, but then he seemed to turn his life around in a big way, not only repenting after being jailed, but he begged forgiveness, which he got, becoming a lay brother in a Capuchin monastery. It seems that that moment really changed him in a big way beyond just an apology to get out of prison or do whatever was necessary. Talk a little bit about Alessandro and what we learned from this book, I Killed Maria Goretti, sort of the insights of the author into this murderer.
Sure. So Pietro De Donato was a writer of other books, and he looked kind of and seemed interested in how Alessandro Serinelli was shaped before and after his conversion by his reading. He, like Maria, he grew up in a very rough life. He lost his mother when he was young, and his father was often drunk and abusive, and also just the life of a peasant farmer. He did spend some time as a sailor and a longshoreman, but he was a voracious reader. He was lucky to be literate, and he read everything, mostly, though, it was very degenerate things, erotic novels, true crime, the very graphic and over-the-top dramatized crime thrillers, as well as what I would almost call pseudo-Nietzschean philosophy, of very much an idea that, you know, he was the moral arbiter alone, there was no good and evil, we're beyond good and evil, and all that stuff. And that had an effect on him to think himself higher. He looked down upon a lot of his fellow man and of all the work he had to do. But his conversion was a road to Damascus moment. It happened a few years in his prison sentence. He had a dream about Maria Goretti, and almost instantaneously he became a model prisoner. He became very penitent, asking for forgiveness, going through all the motions. And again, he started reading, but this time he was reading the saints in the Bible, and it had a profound effect on him to be devout throughout his life.
Amazing. We're talking with Michael Litchens from Sophia Institute Press about the new book, I Killed Maria Goretti. And that's written by Pietro De Donato with interviews with Alessandro Serinelli, the 20-year-old boy or 20-year-old young man who killed Maria Goretti. In this book, what would you say we learn most? What are some of the most moving insights that you you experience in reading this book? About the person Alessandro. Of course, you just recounted his path to redemption, you might say. What do we learn about him that's perhaps eye-opening that the casual person who knows the story a little bit, what kinds of things are revealed in this book?
I would say to go back again to just how important reading and media consumption in general is. Like, we saw how it affected him both before and after his conversion, but we have, you know, much more access to information and media in general than they ever had even 100 years ago. So it's something that I think is important to remember, and I definitely needed the reminder as someone who likes to passively watch YouTube videos when I should be reading. It's something that left a mark on me and something to remember. But I was struck mostly because I never thought of, I knew of Maria Goretti's mother, but this book really opened up to just how strong and courageous she was. When Alessandro came to their house in 1932 to ask for forgiveness, he fell at her knees, and none of us would have blamed her if she had slammed the door in his face. I don't think that would have been any surprise. She didn't do that, though. She touched his face, called him her son, and even welcomed him into the family to an extent that he attended both the beatification of Maria, but also later the funeral of Assunta.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. That's a kind of forgiveness that we all aspire to, but of course, difficult mm-hmm. for anybody who hears that story. We've been talking today with Michael Litchens about the book I Killed Maria Goretti from Sophia Institute Press. And as we wrap up the interview today, of course, part of the reason for the book is to shine the light on Maria Goretti, of course, and her holiness, her mm-hmm. Her purity, and her forgiveness. How can we view her as a modern saint, somebody that we can look at her virtues and aspire to them ourselves?
I would say I adopted since reading this book as a patron saint. I've looked to her because I'm a petty person. I hold a lot of grudges I really shouldn't be holding on to. And I look to her and often ask, you know, for her to help intercede and help me to learn to forgive, because I think a lot of us have a very warped view of forgiveness. We think it's, you know, saying that everything they did was justified, or we see it as a childish thing. You know, you say, I'm sorry now, you say, I forgive you. But it's a lot of work, and it takes a strong heart, and I think the grace of God to really intercede for us to forgive some of the horrible things that people might do. And it's a much better way to live than say, as Christ often told us, we shouldn't return evil with evil. We should be looking to do this, and the world is a better place for it. And I would say, especially after reading this book, the world is a much better place with Maria and Alessandro.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, as always, Michael Litchens, for shedding your insights into some of these great books. And for people who want to pick this one up, tell people where they can go to find out more or to purchase the book, I Killed Maria Goretti.
Sure. It is available at any of your Catholic bookstores. They can order it from Sophia Institute Press, and you can find it yourself at sophiainstitute.com, where it's available as both a book and an ebook. So if you have the chance to read it, I highly recommend it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Michael Litchens, for joining us on today's program and shedding some light on the incredible life and death of Maria Goretti. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you again, Michael.
And that was Michael Litchens talking to us about the great new book from Sophia Institute Press called I Killed Maria Goretti. Check that one out at Sophia Institute Press or anywhere Catholic books are sold. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today, Marian Amberg, author of Incredible Catholic America, and Michael Litchens for talking to us about the book I Killed Maria Goretti. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, every Saturday, but on Saturday, July 12th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, my episode on Lanciano airs. I travel to Lanciano in Italy, where in the middle of the 8th century, a Basilian monk is said to have experienced the transformation of the host and wine into the real presence of Jesus' body and blood. Check that one out on that Saturday and every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth a hunt. Talk to you next week.